Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here around our kitchen table once a week at KHOI Community Radio to talk about food, farming, recipes, advice.
Weather.
Advice, opinions, weather.
The weather is great right now.
And today, we're going to celebrate that weather being great right now, talking about picnics and tomatoes and things. We're sliding into summer. Oh, how nice.
Tis the season. Now, this is really the season.
We had a lovely Memorial Day weekend. Graduations are popping up all over the place.
Probably weddings will start soon.
Oh, yeah. Beginning of summer. Peonies and irises are just ever so nice. Don't you love this time of year? No mosquitoes yet, at least for me.
Oh, I know. It's amazing.
Oh,
it's like,
that's good.
Every day I go out and go, oh, right, there's no bugs yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
So enjoy. I'm going to do a little bit here from, we'd like to check into what's happening, kind of in the broader theme of things.
From the ancients.
From the ancients. This is from the Pagan Book of Days, a guide to festivals, traditions, sacred days of the year, and I just thought I'd look up today. May 30th, honoring Frigg, F-R-I-G-G, the Norse goddess Frigg, queen of heaven, consort of Odin. Also, it's Whitsunday, which traditionally...
If it were Sunday.
Whitsunday, Whitsun is actually based on Pentecost from the Christian calendar. But Whitsunday and Frigg's Day... It's also a traditional time for brewing the Whitsun ales, Whitsun, and for making love in bowers and mazes. So let's get to it.
Well, we got bowers around here. I don't know if we have very many mazes. Corn mazes are not ready yet.
Well, oh dear, I don't want to put ideas in anyone's mind here, but but the Norse goddess Frigg wishes probably us to have a nice day today, May 30th. Yes. So, Donna, what did you do this weekend?
Well, I got out and about a bit. Went out and visited Luke and Sally Grant out on their little, it was a lovely, windy summer day. And, you know, they just are out in classic farm country. Got a little bit of a hill, so they're up with a view. And you can see all the corn sprouting out. And some farmers had all of the fence posts had flags flying on them, you know.
Oh, how nice.
I know. It was cute. It was really sweet.
Very good.
That beautiful Iowa countryside with the clouds, the whole bit.
Don't we live in a nice
place?
Oh,
don't we?
I celebrated the weekend by pulling thistles and mulching. I mulched onions and mulched tomatoes. At the garden,
what are you mulching with?
We have some wheat straw from a farmer south of town. Yeah, it's nice. And boy, you sure get your shirt collar and your shoes full of straw by the end of the day. It's very nice for the plants. Yes, it is. Oh, let's talk about picnics, Donna. This is the season.
Oh, it's picnic season now, for sure. So I did a little research this morning. I hopped down onto Main Street, and I went to Cook's Emporium because I thought, first of all, we like to honor maintaining our local businesses, and we are lucky to have such a charming little cooking store down there. And Marg has just been doing that for a long time, and she was in there, and I said, Marg, we're going to talk about picnics. Do you have any kind of interesting equipment that we should discuss? Because, you know, Lana and I want to encourage you all of our listeners and our dear friends, not to use throwaway disposables, you know, to really... If you're going to do a picnic, let's put the Ritz on a little bit. You know, some like Mark has a beautiful collection of all kinds of very colorful napkins. You might want to have a little set put aside for the picnics. And Lana, what were you telling me? You take your own antique tablecloths with you?
Well, that's something I learned from my mom, because even if you just go to a potluck at a park, there's mm-hmm. picnic tables
right,
there.
Right, to throw a nice covering
but
on the
you
table.
You want to put down, now this is from my mom, you want to put down a nice tablecloth because you never know where those picnic tables have been, right? So at least you have a nice, clean, pretty surface.
It's true.
And it's not that hard to put in a nice tablecloth and nice napkins to match, for goodness sakes. And this is good for the large potluck or even the intimate dinner for two, if you want to do that, too.
Oh, yeah. I have it's actually a long one, so it really is picnic table-sized cloth, but it's an old-fashioned oil cloth, the kind of blue and white checker with, I don't know, some little geometric on it or something that, I mean, I've used it for 15 years or something and mm-hmm. just fold it up and put it away. And it's always good, and it's true, to have a nice, clean surface, mm-hmm. but it also makes it more cheerful, more elegant. I would encourage people to, maybe they don't want to take their best silverware or good stainless steel out, but to have a nice kind of more, in case you lose the knife or something, you know, a less expensive option that you might keep in your picnic mm-hmm. set or something.
Oh, another thing you can throw in with your cutlery is take along some clothespins. Or actually, they do make commercial things that you can clamp
on the table?
Tablecloth on or go underneath the table and kind of secure the corners.
Oh, but those little snap wooden clothespins, how charming.
There you go. Charming is good.
So I found a whole bunch of interesting products there. The first one, which I went in looking for because I've been reading a lot about them over the last couple of years, Mark has something. It's the brand for hers are called Govina. But these are plastic wine glasses, beer glasses, and carafes, and they are extremely lightweight. They are reusable. They look like glass. They're very, very nice. And you just wash them in the dishwasher. And those, I would highly recommend those for patio, poolside, and they're so lightweight. They're really, really easy to travel with. Those were one of the things I was thinking with. They're plastic, but they don't look like plastic. And you can use them and use them and use them. Now, some other things she had, a couple of different kinds of collapsible baskets, like market baskets and stuff. So you've got a picnic basket that doesn't take a lot of room for storage. And they were quite attractive. And another thing that she had, which I bought from her years ago, were some neoprene insulated tote bags, too, are really good if you think it's going to be sitting in the back of the car for a couple of hours or something like that. And then she also had, for the ubiquitous outdoor family gatherings and potlucks and stuff like that, she had some zip-up insulated casserole and pie totes, which look kind of interesting. All these great things.
Oh, keeping things cool, keeping things hot. Good idea.
Yep. And then she had, this was the other thing both she and I talked about, too, for the cheese, right? If you're going to have a cheese board with the wine, of course, the bamboo cutting boards. Now, I have a number of those that I use for all kinds of occasions because they make great cheese boards. But the bamboo boards are more lightweight, so they would be nice for traveling on a little picnic or something like that. And then she introduced me to something that she called the cheese knife.
Oh, not...
I know.
Now, if Marg says it's the cheese knife, right? Okay.
So it's quite clever. It doesn't look like much. It's a plastic knife, for goodness sake. Comes in several sizes. Apparently, it will last forever. But it's a design that was invented in the 1940s to cut Velveeta. So it's really, it's just this ridged plastic, and it's sharp, but it's not sharp enough. I mean, a kid could use it. It's not for cutting carrots and stuff like that. But she showed me. We got the cheese out. She showed me. You just put it, you don't have to saw back and forth on the cheese, which on a delicate cheese is very important because you can just disrupt the brie in a second if it's at room temperature. But it's, you sink it right in, and the wedges on the plastic make it kind of fall apart it's very clever, you know, for a gizmo, I must say.
Well, this was invented in
1940s
to to cutting
Velveeta. Now, is there any gummier cheese on the planet? I don't think so. So it's quite good.
Well, isn't it great that technology can do that? I mean, cutting Velveeta probably was one of the problems that we had.
Oh, man, can you imagine how to be stumped by that Velveeta?
Oh,
anyway.
Onward. So the cheese knife.
The cheese knife.
Okay.
Now, here's the other thing. You know, when you're covering things for picnic or if you made some food that's going to travel, you know, you got to put a cover on it. You don't want to take it out and have some dust fly into it or blah, blah, blah. So she has a number of silicone products, which, you know, silicone is really great. It's highly reusable. Like I have some baking silicone pan liners, which were there for pastry and stuff. And it was kind of the first industrial piece of chef equipment. They're a little pricey, but mine are already at least 20 years old, and they might go another 20 years. So silicone it's pretty fabulous. It does not migrate into your food.
I was going to ask that. It doesn't leave a taste or anything?
It's way better than plastic. And that, you know, it's what breast implants are made out of.
And we know how good those ended up being. Well, anyway, let's get back to
but
the
anyway,
food
saving on plastic wrap, which can be very wasteful and a bit expensive, and it doesn't always stay on anyway. It's messy, you know, or if you cover it with foil, it can come off and the food will spill or something. I mean, it's just so she's got some solutions for this, various ones. This one I may have to go and get. Are you ready for this one? It's called Cover Blubber.
Cover blubber.
It is a stretchable silicone. It's super stretchy. Food saver is what it says. It can go in the fridge. It can go in the freezer. And guess what? Children love it. It's stretchy, so it's kind of like silly putty or something. And she said, for example, they show you get a set of five in different sizes, I think, and one of them is big enough. You know, when you cut the watermelon and you just put it in the fridge, and it's like, oh, or you stick some plastic wrap on it and it slides off.
Good old plastic wrap.
Yeah, right.
Why so for so many years we were fighting with plastic? I never did really have a. It always crumples up.
I know
on me.
It's really can be a drag. And,
good try.
And for caterers, if you have to use layers of plastic wrap, and then there's a thing called a catering wrap where if you're covering with plastic, you actually go 360 degrees all the way around it. And I often use masking tape because you don't want it to spill, right?
Right.
So, Cover Blubber, you can stretch it all the way across that watermelon.
Does it come in a square and a
no,
circle?
No, it's a little round, different diameters. But the largest one, which must be the watermelon size one, is, I don't know, maybe 6 inches across. But it stretches.
Oh, my.
And then it kind of sticks on it. I know, it's pretty cool.
And then when you're done using it, does it like snap back into place?
Yes, and then and then you can just rinse it off with soap and water. I suppose you could put it even in the dishwasher, but it might crumple up and not get clean. But it's really Cover Blubber. I got to have some of that. Then there are other kinds of silicone lids. There's even an Iowa State one that you like. If you've got a bowl of salad, for example, you just slap this lid on it. It's a round thing with a little handle on the top, and it kind of creates just enough suction that it stays on. So to travel with those kinds of things if you're going to like a group picnic and you're bringing a bowl, and they make drink covers for like if you're sitting out on the patio and you don't want the bugs to go in your drink, you just set these little things on them, and they have bottle stoppers. And all of these things, they even have one for casseroles because you can cook with these. It's silicone.
So it's
a lid.
You're kidding.
You could bake with it on. I suppose you could microwave if you're so inclined. They have another kind called a U-cap, which fits on mason jars. There's the two different sizes, and they have a little pop-up spout if you like, for example, I made some rhubarb syrup the other day. So I could put that on, and then you pull the little pop-up spout out, like a little straw thing, and I could just pour it onto, like, ice cream or something.
That sounds really handy.
I know. They are so nifty.
The pop-up. Oh,
I know.
It just makes you want to.
All the things you can. And they're all in kind of cute, summery colors, and, you know, the silicone lids are different kinds of flower things. It's just, Oh,
there you go.
Beyond adorable.
So there's lots of different things to get us out there.
Yes.
Besides, you know, besides just throwing stuff in a basket and using some old yogurt containers.
Exactly. Yeah. My contention is if you do a little shopping, then you're going to be motivated to have more picnics because you're going to go in and you get these really, they're fun, they're creative, and they're useful. And all of the silicone, all these things, you know, you'll use for multiple years. So you're not throwing it away. It's not going in the garbage. And they're mostly, we picked lightweight things just to make it more fun. So if you've got your picnic kit, you'll probably go picnicking a little
right.
more.
I like the idea of those nice-looking glasses. I mean, nice little glass of wine out there. So much better than in a paper cup.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. They're quite elegant. It's a funny feeling because you pick them up and you think you get, you know, they look like glass. It's not like the plastic wine glasses that you buy that you throw away. You know, you go to pick it up, and it's so lightweight.
So you spill the first. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a picnic. It's a picnic.
Right. No.
All right.
There. So I had a good time down at Cook's Emporium this morning. I encourage you all to go in for your summer shopping.
Good.
It was really fun.
Think picnics. Think. Yeah. And speaking of thinking picnics, do you have any food advice, food favorites for the picnic basket?
Well, I don't know why my mind goes here, but a picnic to me, for some reason, is chicken salad sandwiches.
There you go.
And chicken salad is, you know, it's a wonderful summery thing. I mean, who doesn't like chicken salad? If you're making it from scratch, as of course I would, you know, throw the chicken in the pot and boil it long enough till it falls off the bones. Not, you don't want it to go too much longer because the longer the chicken boils, the more the flavor goes into the stock rather than staying in the chicken. So just long enough to be able to pull the meat off the bones. So then I take it out, cool it down, saving, of course, the water. Then I throw the bones and the bits back in and really let it boil down until I've got chicken stock, because you can always use chicken stock. Why waste that? But the trick, my favorite trick for basic chicken salad is, you know, the problem with chicken salad is it can be dry. So the usual way of dealing that is to throw tons of mayonnaise in, right? Which can be good, but it's rather caloric.
No. Also, it's not all that stable on a hot summer day.
No. Unless you're using our highly emulsified processed mayonnaises, which we've all been known to use because we're used to that flavor and that consistency. It's, you know, tastes like childhood. But I take some of the chicken stock and reduce it down and then mix that. It's not that I don't put mayonnaise in, but if you put some chicken stock back into the shredded chicken, it will become more moist.
Oh, yum.
Then you can use less mayonnaise, for example. Or you could use no mayonnaise even. And, even just season it with fresh lemon juice, for example, or something like that. But the wonderful thing about chicken salad is it's the base of so many flavors. You can make it spicy. You can make it herbaceous. You can, you can do your traditional celery. And, of course, I like a few little onions in it and stuff like that. You can put apples in celery or do the latest fashion around here. I saw it at the farmer's market. It was a more Thai version with peanuts in it. Or, you know, it's just so possible to be, you say, oh, I'm bringing chicken salad, but everybody's chicken salad can be completely different. And of course, the quality of the chicken could make a difference too.
There it is.
Yes.
There it is. Goodness.
So I would encourage everybody, get creative with your chicken salad.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And it's always nice to have favorite thing. I don't know. I like to eat anything outdoors, and I like to eat things that I don't have to cook when I get there. I know a lot of people do like to cook and experiment and grill out in en plein air, but I prefer to go there, sit in a lawn chair.
Right,
and
by the time you get there, you're out of the kitchen. You want to forget about it. Just spread it out and then have your beverage of choice and relax and enjoy yourself.
And I have, well, I could give a shout out to anybody who does picnics that are also potlucks, because for many years I was part of a a gourmet cooking club, and I saved the recipes. And or not the recipes, I saved the menus. And
oh, she has a charming little floral cloth covered notebook.
Yeah. There were six of us, and sometimes there were eight, sometimes there were 10. And so we had one night we had a Italian summer picnic. You can pick a theme.
Okay, tell me the date of this so we know the historical
August 25th, 1996. This was probably even before some of the silicone stuff.
Yeah, this was a good 20 years ago.
Oh, so heaven knows how I got this stuff to the picnic, but I know we did.
Probably aluminum foil and plastic wrap.
Tupperware. There's always Tupperware.
Oh, yeah, Tupperware.
We started out with rosemary bourbon almonds. We did lamb
rosemary
kebabs.
Bourbon almonds.
I didn't write down the recipes for any of this, this is good.
You had enough bourbon, you don't remember how they did it.
It doesn't matter. Okay. It doesn't matter. Lamb kebabs.
Oh,
deviled
course.
Eggs. Deviled eggs, which is picnic for me. I love deviled eggs.
Yes, and that's another thing that can have wide variations in flavor we can get really creative with.
Yep. An arugula, red cabbage, and nasturtium salad.
Ooh, sounds perfect still.
Gazpacho. Ah, somebody
brought
gazpacho.
Yes.
Potato and green bean salad.
Perfect, classic.
Cayenne pepper pasta.
Ooh, okay.
Green peas, garlic, parsley, prosciutto.
Huh? All wrapped up. That was in the hot pasta?
No. Oh, no. This is like separate.
Give me green peas.
Garlic, parsley, prosciutto. I think it was wrapped
like
up
like a little
in.
Pouch?
Yep, wrapped up in. Wrapped
cute.
Up in. So there we go. And on May 30th, 1999, we had a gathering, another picnic, called Grill of My Dreams, as opposed to Girl. Okay, so that was some grilled halibut with marinated fillets in corn tacos, huh?
Mm.
Baba ganoush, focaccia, a lamb loin chop with lemon sesame pepper, grilled with asparagus on the grill.
Yum!
Now, see, and this was grilled by somebody who knew what they were doing. And we had a few brats, too. This was a large gathering, actually.
Grilling is an art form.
Yep.
I think we might do a Father's Day show about grilling.
Grilling, that's a whole different thing.
Yes.
Okay? And teriyaki marinated vegetables, huh? That's good, too. And some roasted tomatoes grilled. Tomatoes grilled with garlic, basil, and olive oil. I don't know how in the world you ended up with them not falling through the grill.
Well, maybe those grill baskets. Those are quite useful. And also, if you're using the a Roma tomato as opposed to a...
That'd be good.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be good. A lot of things. Mm-hmm. So look forward to a future show because grilling brats and hamburgers and putting all kinds of protein on the grill is good.
And vegetables.
I got to say, grilling vegetables is really... I love grilled onions for one thing.
I love grilled corn.
Oh, I do too.
Yeah, the whole trick is to not overcook it, but oh, yum.
Do you soak the corn first?
There's two methods, with the husk or without the husk.
Yeah.
Now, if you with the husk, then you soak it.
It takes longer to cook.
Yeah. But if you're doing it without the husk, you know, you just rub a little oil and spice or something. You don't want to cook it too long, but then you get the smoky flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of the little grill marks, you know. Mm-hmm. You just don't want to overdo it till it dries out and becomes tough. Or chewy, as it were, but
summer is coming up on us.
Oh yes, here we are. We're all ready for the corn and tomatoes. Bring it on!
And I recently read a recipe for another grill thing, and I have yet to try this, but it's putting a cabbage on a beer can, half empty, and putting that in a Weber grill and cooking it.
That's from the... There's a way of doing chickens too that was kind of popular. I have to say...
Not so good.
I don't know. It's not my thing. It sounds gimmicky to me. Now I could be completely wrong about it, but...
We'll find out from our vast, vast audience here.
We'll get some good manly grillers to talk about these things. Yeah.
Beer can be really sexist about this and let the men be the grillers. They can grill. I'd rather sit in the lawn chair and just kind of enjoy the day.
Enjoy the day.
It's getting out away from things is really the point of a picnic.
Well, and it's like when I give a party, any kind of party, I do the bulk of the cooking in advance because you want to, you know, you don't want to be sitting in the kitchen while everyone's at the table and you're missing the whole thing. The point of entertaining and cooking is to prepare, have it all ready. You know, sometimes you have to warm something up or something, but the logistics of being the chef and the hostess, you know, that's why I think I'm not a big – someone else can grill. I don't want to be cooking at the party.
Very good. Very good. And some people like to fuss with fire.
Oh, and some people – yeah, absolutely. And,
more power,
you know,
to
I'm always happy when somebody else is doing it.
Very good.
Just a personal prejudice for me.
Oh, you're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOY 89.1, and we're talking about picnics today. I'm going to play a bit of a tune here from a couple of musicians, Lou and Peter Berryman. They are bards. They are troubadours of the finest sense with a wry sense of humor. This is a little tune about picnics, but it starts out with a rather frantic list of reasons why we go on picnics in the first place.
Make the bed, fix the car, feed the dog, make the calls, clean the sink, pay the rent, wax the floor, wash the walls, polish the boots, water the grass, fillet the fish, letter the home, style the hair, launder the clothes, comb up the brush, boil the comb, pick up the policy, put up the cucumber, paint on the patio, careful it drips. Instead I think I'll have a drink and kiss you on the lips. Pack up a picnic, pick up a kayak, take a boat ride out along the shores of Wanakee, and if you say so, we'll let the boat go. Hold each other's hands and drift completely out to sea. Buy the rose, rent the suit, call the best, make the date, shine the shoes, trim the beard, cut the hair, don't be late, manicure your nails, think of the speech, suck the claret, dial the cab, dine in the dark, smile a lot, mumble your love, pick up the tab, thinking of later and thanking the waiter and thanking the cabby and leaving the tips. Instead I think I'll have a drink and kiss you on the lips. Pack up a picnic, pick up a kayak, take a boat ride out along the shores of Wanakee, and if you say so, we'll let the boat go. Hold each other's hands and drift completely out to sea. Graduate, jog a lot, know the mayor, read the news, smoke the pot, have the kids, know your art, dig the blues, go to a shrink, cook on a grill, purchase a home, get into Zen, get into law, social unrest, have an affair, do it again. Sponsor a party where everyone's standing with Perrier water and vegetable dips. Instead I think I'll have a drink and kiss you on the lips. Pack up a picnic, pick up a kayak, take a boat ride out along the shores of Wanakee, and if you say so, we'll let the boat go. Hold each other's hands and drift completely out to sea. Pack up a picnic, pick up a kayak, take a boat ride out along the shores of Wanakee, and if you say so, we'll let the boat go. Hold each other's hands and drift completely out to sea.
That was Pack Up a Picnic, and I Hope You Do by Lou and Peter Berryman. Some fine words of
very
wisdom there.
Funny.
Yes, yes. Just kind of float completely out to sea you're on your picnic.
I was thinking of the, if you go down in the woods today, you're sure of a big surprise.
Oh, I love
the Teddy
one.
Bears Picnic.
I have
the Bing Crosby version at home somewhere.
Well, very good.
Well, I played it for my children. Then I had to play it for my grandchildren. You know what I mean? It's an important song, right?
And that's got picnic in it, too.
That's right.
So there you go. Yeah. So another thing about picnics is there we are in the great outdoors, and especially if it's a potluck, we all bring our best. And when the season is right, I do bring tomatoes. A lot of people bring tomatoes, but tomatoes,
I mean,
yeah.
Folks, we have the tomato queen here.
Well, what is amazing is that tomatoes, there's a romance. People have opinions about tomatoes. I mean, potatoes or green beans or whatever, you say, oh, give me a green bean, give me a potato. But you say tomato, and they say, oh, but my grandmother did this. Or I've been growing this one for years. Or There's so many to pick from, so many different kinds.
The number of varieties, I guess that's, and the colorful names, and the colorful tomatoes, you know?
What a joy, what a joy. I've been enjoying a book, Donna passed this on to me, called The Heirloom Tomato, From Garden to Table, Recipes, Portraits, and a History of the World's Most Beautiful Fruit by Amy Goldman.
And she was, or is, but I think was, she has a big Seed Savers connection. I mean, I know she's from New York, but she's been very involved in Seed Savers.
Yeah, she was on, I don't know if she is now, but she was on the board for a while of Seed Savers Exchange. And thank goodness for Seed Savers Exchange right here in Iowa.
Yes, a wonderful Iowa institution.
So she teamed up with a photographer called Victor Schrager, who made tomatoes into still lifes, bits of art. They're just lovely. She writes about them. He photographs them. And there's wonderful things you can learn about tomatoes. I grow tomatoes. I love
How many did
tomatoes.
We plant this season?
Oh, we planted about, well, we started out optimistically, starting out with about 30 varieties. But some of them bit the dust this year. I don't know. Things happen. So maybe I planted out 25. But anyway, 25 different varieties. So there you go. But they're so nice. People do have opinions.
And when do you think the tomatoes will start to appear in the farmer's market?
Oh, well, actually, you can get some hothouse tomatoes probably right now. But the ones fresh from the garden, look around the 4th of July. Yeah, look around the 4th of July.
Okay, all right. We've got five weeks, maybe. Okay.
And there's probably
some other ones.
Yeah. There's all different kinds. There's one thing I wanted to say is that there's determinate tomatoes and indeterminate tomatoes.
Determinate and is that like a determined tomato?
It's determined or the rather flighty indeterminate. Well, not really. It has to do with the vine and the growth habit. Determinate tomatoes stay short and they're short, stay, you know, chest high or less. And the tomatoes all come at once, more or less. And the indeterminate ones, you wouldn't think, but if it wouldn't freeze, they'd just keep on going. Long vines, they just keep going. And there's a trick, and there's a reason why indeterminates are still really popular. It's because one thing about making a tomato tasty is its leaf to fruit size ratio. And the long indeterminate vines generally have lots more leaves. The more leaves, the more solar energy gets into the plant.
Oh, so the more leaves, the better do the tomatoes taste?
The more leaves, the better.
Now,
there's all of the kind of things, but no, that's it, because that they're working
so
on.
So why would people buy indeterminate ones then?
Oh, determinate ones. Indeterminate goes on forever. Determinate stays short.
So which one has more leaves?
Indeterminate.
The indeterminate.
Generally.
Right, so why would you grow the determinate ones?
A lot of people just like things handy. Maybe you want all your aromas, which most are determinate.
Oh, all at once.
Or you're only going to be in town for maybe the month of August. You know, they're all at once. Yeah. So that's one reason that those two. Then there's dwarf varieties. There's all the kinds of things that are mixed together.
So
there's,
you grow some of both?
I grow out some of both, but mainly I sell tomato plants, and people do buy them, especially for small space gardens. They're perfect. They're wonderful. The smaller ones they're great. But I plant mostly indeterminates. Yes, I do.
Because they go on longer.
They go on longer. Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah, and they can be all different kinds of shapes and sizes, too. They can be currant size, just teeny tiny, and they're wonderful. Little teeny. Now, you're not going to can a lot of those, but they're great to eat.
And they're good for child picking,
too. Oh, they're wonderful. And a cherry size, you know what a cherry tomato is. And there's round, ribbed ones. Yeah, they've got little ribs on the side.
Is that the Costoludos?
Yeah, Costoludos is a kind like that.
Kind of ruffledy looking.
Ruffledy.
Yeah.
That round and smooth, that's what we generally think of as a tomato. The beefsteak ones. Now, they also get big, and they really, maybe it looks like three tomatoes are growing together.
Yeah, those are like the sandwich cutters.
Yeah,
they are.
Big things. And then there's pear and plum shaped.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Those are good too. And there's even a tomato that is called a pepper shape, because they're not peppers, but they're actually hollow on the inside. It's a special variety for people that like to stuff their tomatoes. See, there's something for everybody. And I grew a kind this year called ox heart. And I've grown other ones like this.
Now, those have nice colors, don't they?
Pretty. This one's orange. It's lovely. And think of a pear upside down. The point is on the bottom. I don't know why that is there, but it's always
now. Those are kind of slicers.
Yeah, they're really, really big, and they're
okay.
Slices. Yeah. So I grew a lot of different kinds, and I
just got a list here.
Yeah.
New varieties from Onion Creek. There's the pink red tomatoes, the not red tomatoes, the red paste tomatoes, the cherry and tiny tomatoes. Oh, and then she's got peppers too.
But that's a different thing altogether. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But talking about the romance of names, I pick tomatoes and grow them out for years and realize which does good. But my first initial reaction is looking through this huge catalog of wonderful tomatoes, and usually there's a little bit of a story behind each
right.
one. Yeah, and that's lovely. Or I just go by the names. My current most favorite tomato, well, not my go-to tomato, the red tomato that is kind of, I know will do well on my farm, is called St. Pierre. And it has nothing to do with my experience as a gardener or nothing scientific about why I initially picked that tomato. St. Pierre, I picked that because I went to a Lutheran parochial grade school called St. Peter's. And so, and also, the parson,
that makes it a very rational choice. Yes, of course.
That must be a good tomato. And also, right kitty corner from the parsonage on this little plot of land where the St. Peter's school and church was my French teacher, Madame Durand, who never really succeeded in teaching me a lot of French, but when I come across St. Pierre, or I can at least throw a little bit of proper accent onto it. So that's one reason.
And how big are the St. Pierre's?
Oh, they are a medium-sized red all-purpose tomato.
Okay.
There you go. There
Classic
you go.
Tomato flavor, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Bright. And
yeah. It is. And it's most of the things I grow are open-pollinated, old heirlooms, and that's mm-hmm. one of them. It's from France. Lots of good stuff out there. There's some, but don't always go by the names, because at one time I picked a variety that looked good. It said tasty early red. Big, tasty early red. That's well, I'll take one of those. I grew those out, and the only thing it was red. It was not tasty. It was not red, and it was not early. So
well, you know, there's a, and I'm not a botanist, and I'm not even that much of a gardener, but for example, the varieties that I learned to like at the farmers markets in California were, you know, like the Brandywine or the classic when people started first talking about heirloom tomatoes, maybe in the 90s or something, and they were really, really good. And I moved here, and of course, people were growing, because those were the most written about heirloom tomatoes at the time, people were growing the same varieties here. And you know what? They did not taste as good.
Yeah.
I think we need our own varieties that do well here.
Right. The eating local and being aware of what grows low. Even my garden is different than someone else's garden. More sun, different soil. Mm-hmm. You find your favorite. A good thing I was reading about in this book called The Heirloom Tomato from Garden to Table, there's a whole bunch of pages, along with gorgeous pictures, about the tomato called Mortgage Lifter. Mortgage. Now, that's a name just totally based on the romance of the fact that, yes, this made a lot of money. And
it was productive.
It was productive. And the very, well, supposedly, the very
There's
first
There's some mortgage
one.
Lifter beans as
yeah,
well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, it says in here that mortgage lifter was applied to a lot of different mortgage lifter beans, mortgage lifter potatoes, things that, yeah, did well and helped make their day. The first mortgage lifter is is credited to a guy named Radiator Charlie Biles. His name was and he was a mechanic. And supposedly he lived, now there's, of course, there's a story. He lived in this valley, Big Hills. And this was early in the past century. And he was in the perfect place because cars and trucks were not quite as reliable as they are now. And cars would come down those hills and couldn't quite make it up the other one, and they'd end up back down in front of Radiator Charlie's shop. And he would not only assist them with fixing their car, but he grew this kind of mortgage lifter, and he got more well-known for growing tomatoes than... Now tomatoes, the mortgage lifter tomato, there's all different kinds of varieties, all different kinds. There's German mortgage lifter, Mullidge mortgage lifter, McGarity's mortgage lifter, Halliday's mortgage lifter, the Queensberry mortgage lifter. They all look a little
Which
different.
Which one are you growing? You've got it on, it says big, meaty.
It just says mortgage lifter.
Okay.
I have no idea. They're in catalog just as mortgage lifters, too, but you never know what you're going to get. They're big, they're meaty. Sometimes they crack. Sometimes they're kind of sloppy, but they're worth the trouble. Yes, they are. And by my count, just in this book alone, they're, along with the ones that are listed and the ones that are pictured, each entry has synonyms. So they're called lots of different things. And I counted up 80 different things could be called a mortgage lifter.
Oh.
Would you believe it or not?
Yeah.
And people swear about it.
Well, I suppose that's why they have those Latin names, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So you're growing some not red tomatoes also this year?
I see the
green zebra, which is one of my favorites. The black plum.
I love that one too.
Aunt Ruby's German green.
That's lovely.
Now I do love the yellow tomatoes.
Yep. There's two of my favorites. There's a yellow plum called Fargo's Yellow Pear, which is good, huh? And there's Jean Flamme. The Flamme is like mortgage lifter has a wide variety of things, but they're yellow, they're medium to small, and the Jean Flamme is a French heirloom, has been around for a while, is yellow on the outside and kind of pinkish on the inside.
Oh, so it's got kind of color streaks.
It's pretty nice.
Ooh.
I want to mention another kind of tomato. I don't grow this one, but it's around. You can find this one. It's in seed catalogs all over the place, and it has a central Iowa connection. Matt's Wild Cherry. A lovely
Wild Cherry tomato.
Matt's Wild Cherry. And that was brought to this country and grown out by Johnny's Selected Seeds in Maine, a wonderful seed house out there. The seed was brought from Mexico. It was given to Matt Liebman.
Our own Matt Liebman.
Matt Liebman. And
he's the Wallace Chair at ISU. Yes.
There he is. He and his wife, Laura Merrick, they lived in Maine at the time.
And they're really good gardeners.
They're great gardeners.
Yeah, right.
And they found this tomato from a friend in Mexico, and they brought it back. And now it is in seed catalogs all over, and some people just really love the thing. Here is a quote by Matt from the Department of Agronomy at Iowa State University. He wrote, "My relationship with this plant is one of affection for its weediness. I work on weed ecology and management and enjoy its flavor. It's still the best, though most laborious, salsa tomato we raise. Actually, it raises itself every year as a volunteer. I just move a few plants around the garden, set up some concrete reinforcing wire cages, and turn them loose." Yeah. There we go.
Sounds like even I might be able to grow this. I should ask Matt for some.
Matt's Wild Cherry.
Yeah.
Yes, you could. It's nice to find. And again, they get used to growing here in central Iowa. And actually, they're probably a little different than the ones grown in Maine because genetics work that way. Yes, they do. So think tomatoes.
Yep, we got a nice tomato season to look forward to.
And get a chance, look up the book The Heirloom Tomato from Garden to Table by Amy Goldman. It's just got pictures to die for. Yes,
it pictures. Oh, it does. Oh, it's inspirational.
You're listening to KHOI. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was some music by the Barn Owl Band. If you just can't get enough of KHOI's Donna Lana Kitchen, go to khoifm.org. That's the website, and we've got a page there. Go to Talk, go to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've got archives. We've got recipes. You can go there. And if you'd like to contact us, khoiradio@gmail.com. Do you have opinions on tomatoes? I bet you have opinions on tomatoes, or opinions on grilling. Heaven knows people have opinions on that. And last week, we asked if you have any tried and true remedies or philosophies about Creeping Charlie. We would love to hear from you. What's on your plate? Contact us, khoiradio@gmail.com. So Don asked me if it's too late to plant tomatoes. It's not. Get yourself a tomato plant.
Get yourself a plant and get it in there.
Yeah, and it loves sun, so put it in the sun. I don't think there's any such thing as, oh, I need a tomato to grow under a tree. No, I don't think so. It needs sun. But they're tough. Good luck. Good luck with your tomatoes. We talk about food here. We talk about the kitchen. I'd like to consider the kitchen table here as center of life, center of family, center of culture. I'd like to read a poem for you by Joy Harjo from the book How We Became Human, New and Selected Poems. I found out about Joy Harjo from attending a ISU lecture series a number of years ago. Here was this fine woman on the stage of the Memorial Union and reading her work. Wonderful things. She is a Native American. She belongs to the Muscogee Nation. And she writes poetry. She lives in Honolulu, Hawaii, teaches at UCLA, and travels frequently and plays a saxophone with her band. Actually, the lecture I went to, she brought her saxophone along, and somehow her poems and her saxophone worked out really well together. So this is a poem about kitchen table, the center of it all, actually. The name of the poem is called Perhaps the World Ends Here. The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of earth are brought and prepared, set on the table. So it has been since creation, and it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it. Babies teethe at the corners. They scrape their knees under it. It's here that children are given instruction on what it means to be human. We make men at it. We make women. At this table we gossip. We call enemies and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor falling down selves. And as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It's a place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table. We have prepared our parents for burial here. At this table, we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite.
Oh, boy, the kitchen table.
A poem by Joy Harjo from her book, How We Became Human. Yes. Well, we talked about picnics. Oh, does that inspire you? We talked about picnics today and tomatoes. Yes, that's good. Good time, good summertime things. There's a few upcoming things happening.
Oh, we've got some wonderful events coming every weekend. It is just full of
good stuff.
Local activities.
Art Walk, downtown, Friday, June 2nd. Come on and mingle.
Always a pleasant occasion.
And also this weekend, beginning on Thursday and going through Sunday, Scandinavian Days.
Oh, yes. I'm going this year, Lana.
There's Kumla, there's Kringla, and there's Lutefisk tossing.
So yes, the Lutefisk throw is on Saturday.
Oh, so you don't want to miss any of that stuff. So
there's chainsaw carving.
Huh?
I think there's a tractor parade, too, or firehouse. There's all kinds. And the carousel will be open, of course. I want to go to taste all the pastries.
Very good. I think Kringla is one of the better additions that the Scandinavian countries have brought to the world. Three cheers for Kringla. Next week, we'll have a report from the field from our roving reporter, Nick Odey. I think he's got a...
From Practical Farmers of Iowa.
He's got an interview kind of in the works here. I do believe he told me it was about goats. So do tune in for that.
Oh, fun.
Goats, yes. So thank you for joining us today around our kitchen table. You can listen to the Donna Lana Kitchen at noon. Repeated at 7 p.m. on Tuesdays or any time.
Or any old time.
Any old time. You can stream, download, and all that stuff at khoyfm.org. Look for Donna Lana Kitchen Archives, recipes, all that kind of stuff. Support this fine radio station. Enjoy summer and pack up a picnic. Yes. We've had music from Lou and Peter Berriman and the Barn Owl Band. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We have had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.